Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Today's lesson is the road to discovery.
Like my new Toyota RAV4 Platinum. With the Entune Premium JBL Audio with integrated navigation and app suite, I'm always finding someplace new.
Trust your heart and your feet will open a new way.
Like my RAV4. It has a hands-free, foot-activated power liftgate.
Class dismissed.
Anybody want to ride in my RAV4?
Me! I humbly accept your offer.
Well, come on.
When you're driven by discovery, you find adventure. The 2017 RAV4 Platinum. Toyota. Let's go places.
Welcome into the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen here with James Anderson. It is Thursday, October 6th. On the podcast today, we want to talk about Dynasty rookie rankings, taking a look at the draft class of 2016. A few weeks ago on the podcast, which you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, really all over the internet, we talked about our top six rookies in this class. James has a great article that's up on RotoWire.com that goes really in-depth on all the rookies in this 2016 class. So we'll kind of be working off that as well. Make sure to give that a read. But just to recap, the top six rookies in this class, and this does not include, at least the article doesn't include, Joel Embiid and Dario Saric, correct?
Yeah.
Right. So Ben Simmons, 1, Brandon Ingram, 2, Chris Dunn, 3, Jamal Murray, 4, Dragan Bender, 5, and Buddy Hield, 6. And again, these are Dynasty League rankings, not necessarily how we feel about these guys for the upcoming 2016-17 season. But we'll get right into it. We'll start with Embiid and Saric. Again, they're not on this list, but obviously they factor in here, and Saric maybe more than we thought with Ben Simmons going down for the first couple months of the season with a foot injury. But we'll start with Joel Embiid. He made his long-awaited NBA debut, albeit in a preseason game on Tuesday. Looked pretty good. Played, I think, 13 minutes. Had 2 baskets. I think he took 5 shots, a couple blocks, 4 rebounds. Overall, it was an encouraging start over a small sample for Embiid. So if you're looking at this list, and Embiid will qualify as a rookie as far as the NBA is concerned this season, where does he fit in when you're looking at dynasty leagues?
Someone asked me about this in the comments, and I had a really hard time deciding where to put him. I settled on putting him third, or telling the person I would put him third, in between Brandon Ingram and Chris Dunn. I think he's got the upside to be the best player, or I mean, he could have a better next 7-8 years than Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram. But I just think you have to factor in the risk, the health risk with given the injury, given the position he plays, given how big he is, just that it's much more likely, I think, that he misses significant time over the next 5-6 years than either of those guys. But just on a pure talent perspective, I just couldn't put him any lower than 3.
Yeah, I mean, even with the Simmons injury, it's a different context than Embiid. And you know, I think you and I, and just about anybody who watches basketball, hopes that Embiid stays healthy. But you know, big men with foot injuries this early in their career, there's not a great track record for that. So it's something you have to factor in when you're projecting his long term value. But you know, assuming he is able to stay healthy or relatively healthy, and you know, Philly's probably going to limit his minutes for most of the season, and they definitely will to start the year. 2-3 years down the road, if Embiid is healthy, is his upside as high as an Anthony Davis or a Karl Towns?
I just don't see it, because I don't think his usage will ever be up to where those guys are. I also, you know, he's a better shooter than really anybody that's as tall as he is should be. I was actually kind of surprised. It's been so long, it seems. I was surprised to go back and look. He actually was a decent free throw shooter in college relative to what you'd expect from a guy like that. But I don't see any team, especially a team that has Ben Simmons on it, just pounding it into Embiid every single possession down, it just doesn't seem like a solid, sound way to try to win games in today's league. I think there's a place for big men and back to the basket type of guys, and he's not just a back to the basket guy. He can step out and shoot it a little bit, but just I don't see him ever dominating possessions the way that Davis and Towns do.
Yeah, I mean, he has the athleticism. It's tough to pinpoint what exactly it is, but I'm with you. I think Towns and Davis are a little bit more just dynamic offensively. Like, it's hard to see. You know, we saw Karl Towns like handle the ball in the open court a few times last year. Like, I just don't, like, Embiid has the ability to do that, but he's just not going to do it.
You're not going to see, you know, them clear out, like, Embiid's got it, like, on one of the wings, and he's, you know, facing up his guy and then, like, trying to go by him. You know, like, Towns and Davis can do that, and that's what makes them so special. And I think you'll also, you know, you can expect better shooting percentages from those two, from the line and from three-point range. I mean, I think Embiid eventually will get to the point where at least on top of the key and corner threes, he's an option. But I don't think he'll ever shoot it as well as Towns projects to or Davis would project to. And then I think those guys probably have the edge in steals. There's
shot blocking is where maybe Embiid has the advantage.
Yeah. But I mean, I think those guys probably have the advantage in minutes per game too.
I mean, it could be you know, middle of next season. We're talking, assuming that Embiid is healthy, where he's really, you know, playing 35 minutes a game, like Towns and Davis will be.
And I don't even with like all the time Davis has missed with random stuff, he still just got so much more injury risk than those two guys, especially more than Towns. So it's just he's that kind of caliber of physical freak, but just in the way it translates to the court, I don't see him having that kind of value.
I do almost wonder if his size works against him in that way. I mean, he's like 3 inches taller than Towns. Like, it's not like physically possible for him to be as quick. And
I think like the perfect big man is a 6'11" guy with that's crazy long. Like, I don't think you would ever, if you could just design a guy in a lab. To me, I wouldn't go taller than 6'11". I would go a little extra on the wingspan, but I think it's so important that you're able to move laterally, run up and down the court without it kind of looking weird, without it looking like you're putting added strain on your body. And I think he is just a bit bigger than ideal.
So what about Saric?
He's a bit tougher just because we haven't seen him as much as you and I have seen Embiid play. I said I'd put him in between Chris Dunn and Jamal Murray at fourth on the list just because, you know, this is kind of a weak class, especially after the top two or three guys. So, I don't really see the case for taking a guy like Murray over Saric, given Saric's upside. But I would probably take Dunn over him.
Right. I mean, if you want to compare him, like, Dragan Bender is probably the closest thing that we have to Saric, you know, who was drafted in the 2016 class. And I don't think there's much of a debate that Saric is a better prospect than Bender, right? I mean, Saric went later in his respective draft, but a lot of that was, you know, teams picking ahead didn't want to wait the 1-2. I mean, at that time, it wasn't even known if or when he was coming over. Philadelphia obviously kind of had the luxury of being in the rebuilding process and were more than happy to wait as kind of as many years as it took for him to be here.
So, like, if I think of those two guys as being eligible for this draft class, knowing that Saric is coming over this year and knowing that Embiid's healthy enough to at least play a little bit this year, I think Simmons still goes one. I think Embiid goes two. Yep. I think Ingram goes three. And I think Saric goes four. And the Embiid over Ingram thing, I think, has a lot to do with just the Lakers. I don't think they're as high on Ingram as I am. And just Ingram versus Embiid, I think you make a case that Embiid might have more value in reality than fantasy. I think Ingram's percentages with the shooting and lack of injury risk, I think it makes up for the defensive gap between the two guys.
No, I agree with you there. I think those would have been the four prospects that were kind of all, like, any in some order, they would be the top four picks. There's a clear line to me between a guy like Ingram, or are we assuming in this scenario that Embiid has the same injury risk that we thought he did coming out of Kansas in 2014?
I'm assuming in this scenario that he has the same, like it's the same as like today. Like,
okay.
Like, you know, he's had this injury in his past.
That's interesting.
You know that he's worked his way back.
Sure.
Like, what do you think Philly would do if you're deciding between Embiid and Simmons?
So if you could rewind to June, late June, and say, all right, you can basically keep Embiid where he is as now, knowing everything that you know,
right.
Or you can have Brandon Ingram.
Or you could have Simmons, Ingram, or Embiid. Like, how do you think that goes?
I still think Simmons is number one in this scenario.
Yeah, me too.
The injury history is just too much with Embiid, but I think it becomes a debate with Ingram.
I think it's definitely
a debate with Saric and anyone below that.
I think certain teams, the Lakers included, would take Embiid over Ingram. I think some of the smarter teams would take Ingram.
That's an interesting debate.
I think the Lakers. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're very smart. I think they would have taken Embiid.
Okay, so now getting back to the list in the article, Jaylen Brown checks in at number 7 behind Buddy Hield at 6. I don't know what to think of Jaylen Brown. I think he might shoot like 41% from the field this year, maybe even lower, which as a wing is not great. I don't think the minutes are going to be there. But at some point, Boston has to figure out this rotation. And if we're talking dynasty, you know, 2-3 years down the road, Brown could be sitting, his position could be a lot better than it looks right now.
Yeah, I think, at the very least, he's got the name value, the fact that he was the number 3 pick. You're going to be able to cash that in. Like, if you're, in fantasy, like if you're contending this year and you have Jaylen Brown, you'll be able to trade him at some point during the year for something useful, I think. I think he's going to have more value, at least over the first 2 or 3 months in trade value, than Wade Baldwin, who I have ranked 8th. I think there's just a ton of risk here, though, and I really don't see any reason why he's going to be seeing significant minutes for them anytime soon.
No, I don't either. And, I mean, this is a team that is kind of simultaneously building. They're not rebuilding. They're kind of continually building, but also contending, by default, just because there's such an amalgamation of talent on that roster. And I mean, I could see him playing, less than 10 minutes a game in the playoffs.
Yeah. And fast forward to next year. Like, I think he's going to be kind of just a non-factor this year from a fantasy perspective. Fast forward to next year, say that Brooklyn pick is like a top 3 pick.
It should be.
Right. Say they take a wing who is much better than
Jason Tatum, for example. Sure.
Much better prospect than Jaylen Brown is, then all of a sudden you're looking at a guy who might, even next year, after this year, might be like the 8th or 9th man.
Exactly. I was saying this exact thing to DJ earlier this week. Like, the 2017 draft has like up to 10 players who would have been in consideration for picks like 1 through 4 in this past draft. Like, I mean, you look at a guy, I mean, I don't know how closely you follow this stuff, but Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, both of those guys should be head and shoulders prospects above Jaylen Brown, who's a fine prospect. Mm-hmm. But these guys are, legitimate, potential superstar type of guys. I don't know if you could necessarily say that about Brown. I mean, look at Ivan Rabb. Like, Ivan Rabb is going to be like a late lottery pick in 2017. Right. Had he come out as a more unpolished player in this past draft, he could have gone in the top 5 or 6. I mean, this is going to be a stacked draft. And when you look at it from Boston's perspective, they're already so stocked everywhere. Even if they don't get a wing, what if they have a chance to get, Markelle Fultz or Dennis Smith? Like, what does that mean for Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, it's that the best scenario for Jaylen Brown is that they go point guard with that pick.
I think
replace Brown, I guess, on the depth chart. But there's just so many scenarios where I think
I don't think Jaylen Brown is going to factor into their draft plans.
No, but
I don't think he's good enough.
Right. Like, if they decide they like Tatum or Jackson or Harry Giles or whoever, they're gonna take that guy, and it's gonna be like, well, maybe Brown plays,
right?
Maybe he doesn't. Like, it doesn't really matter. I think they just kind of looked at the guys available in the draft this year, and just came to the conclusion that we're not high enough on any of these guys to ever be key rotation guys for us on a championship team. I think they kind of screwed themselves there because of the fact that they, I think they did factor the fact that they have Marcus Smart on the team, they have Avery Bradley on the team, into passing on Dunn.
Yep.
Like, I think Chris Dunn, I would take him over Bradley, over Marcus Smart in a heartbeat, if you're just especially trying to build a team. Yeah, yeah. And so that might have been a mistake there, but if they are higher on those guys than I am, I guess I kind of get it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown to me is not an asset coming into this year from a fantasy perspective.
All right, what about Wade Baldwin? He's at number 8, getting some extended playing time early in the preseason with the Grizzlies, you know, taking it easy, you know, with their starters. But, I mean, as you wrote in the first line of his little write-up here, if Mike Conley goes down at any point, like, Wade Baldwin is going to be playing big, big minutes, because this Grizzlies team is pretty shallow, really all over beyond its starting, you know, top 5 or 6 guys.
Yeah, and you kind of have to assume Tony Allen at least misses some time this mm-hmm. year. Conley doesn't really have that much of an injury track record, so I wouldn't assume he misses more than 5 or 10 games. But, you know, just kind of talking out loud about this, I might take Baldwin over Brown if it was just...
yeah, we just, like, trashed Jaylen Brown, and we're like, but he's still number 7.
I think that just you're in pretty much any league you're in, Brown's just got more cachet right now than Wade Baldwin does. But if you look at the measurables, he's just one of those guys that could just be a lot better in the NBA mm-hmm. than he was in college.
I don't know how high Baldwin's ceiling is, but I think he has a really, really high floor. And I think Memphis is a good spot for him, you know, learning under Fizdale. And I mean, this is a guy who can play shooting guard. He can defend the three. I don't know how much you want him playing the three, probably not a whole lot. But he's got the size to play shooting guard. And you look at the depth chart behind Tony Allen, it's Vince Carter, Troy Daniels, James Ennis, mm-hmm. you know, Andrew Harrison, who might not even make the team. I mean, there's going to be opportunities here, even if there isn't an injury to Conley or you know, Tony Allen does play 70 games. Like, Wade Baldwin is probably going to be the eighth man opening the year, and I think he could climb a little bit higher than that. So I like him quite a bit. The thing about him, though, is, like, there's no clear path to him starting at point guard for the Grizzlies next season or the season after or the season after.
Right. That's an issue with a few of the guys that we're going to talk about here, where you don't see the obvious avenue for starters minutes, but you know, things change in a hurry.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies, I think, could easily get to the point in the next calendar year where they're sellers and they kind of blow the whole thing up. That Mike Conley contract is extremely tradable. They could move that to any number of teams and actually get valuable pieces back. So if they do kind of hit the reset button on the franchise, which they probably should have done a year or two ago, just given where the rest of the teams in the Western Conference are, if they hit that reset button, then all of a sudden Baldwin becomes the primary ball handler.
They seem to me a little bit like the Atlanta Hawks, where it's, you know, they kind of had that, you're at that crossroads this summer where you could have let Conley walk and have that cap space, you know, because mm-hmm. all you have locked up, you got Randolph coming up the next couple of years, and they kind of chose to keep the status quo. And it's like, yeah, if things go as they should, you're a playoff team, but you're not winning anything. And I think Atlanta, you know, they tried to keep Horford. They, you know, we spoke with KL from Hawks.com, and he said they wanted to get Horford and Howard together initially. That was the plan. And obviously Horford, you know, getting out of there kind of put the kibosh on that. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation, especially for a team like Memphis that, you know, is in a smaller market, has kind of built up a lot of clout, I think, with that community in the last 5 or 10 years. It's hard to kind of sell that, but I'm with you. And then at some point, you know, this core is as old as it is. If it's not this year, it might be next year, or for sure, I think, the year after that. You have DeJounte Murray at number 9. How much of this is, I don't want to say bias, personal?
I mean, it's my list. The whole thing is bias. Like, it's... The entire list is my bias.
Okay. So, all right. Well, sure. Then, fine. How much of this is bias then?
100%.
Okay.
I mean, this is how I decided to rank the guys. I think
this might be low for Murray.
During the process, I could have probably talked myself into putting Murray up a few spots. There's a guy that we're going to get to in a minute here who if I was redoing this, I might throw up 5 or 6 spots. So, I mean, a lot's kind of changed since this list came out. Murray, to me, he's kind of the opposite situation what we were just talking about with Baldwin, where there's no scenario in the immediate future where it's like Conley's definitely going to be out of the way. Where with Murray, I mean, Tony Parker is very, very short for being a starting point guard in the league. I think maybe you look at this as his final year in that capacity. It just doesn't seem like even the Spurs and the fact that, you know, Pop's been through a lot with him and everything like that. I think he transitions into the role that Manu Ginobili is in, like last year, where he's just kind of around, you know, he's playing 20 minutes a game and it's not necessarily even good minutes. You're just kind of keeping him around for the postseason. I think that eventually they make that transition.
And you think Murray's the guy they hand it off to?
Well, they don't have. To me, I love Patty Mills as a player, like a real life player, probably more so than fantasy. But he's not a point guard. He needs to be shooting the ball, instant offense. Kyle Anderson to me is someone that could be maybe like a Sean Livingston type of guy, where he plays point guard at times, but he's maybe kind of running with the second unit. So really the only guy left on the roster who I see as a potential starting point guard down the road in the NBA is Murray. So unless they were to kind of upgrade that position externally, I think it would have to be him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do think that maybe they do look outside of the organization, and it depends, I guess, how they feel about DeJounte Murray after this year. But this is you might just completely laugh at this, but Chris Paul can be a free agent next summer. Like, I feel like San Antonio was on the short list of teams he would consider.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think he would absolutely consider it. I don't know how much. I mean,
the respect for Pop is there, obviously.
No, I don't know how much Pop would want Chris Paul, especially if we're talking about a significantly past his prime Chris Paul, because he doesn't. You know, the ball sticks with him. Like, yeah. It's not a you're not moving it around. And I know that, you know, they brought in a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge who doesn't necessarily fit into the Spurs way of playing either. But to me, that was just a look. We have to bring in some talent from the outside. We have Kawhi Leonard who's in his prime. Nobody else is even a top 50 player who's also in their primes. So we need to give him a guy. Aldridge is his style isn't necessarily our style, but he's a good. He's going to be willing to kind of defer
they made it
a little
work,
bit.
Too. Yeah. I mean, they were proven right in this scenario.
When you're talking about a point guard, like a Chris Paul type of point guard, his attitude becomes the team attitude. And that's always sort of been kind of a locker room to me, where there's never been sort of one guy who's the vocal guy. It's kind of been like the collection of guys. It's been Pop and Duncan a little bit here, but it's not been like this one guy kind of driving home a message of his own. I just don't see it as a perfect fit, but at the same time, you know, do you see Chris Paul ever being a guy who gets to his point and it gets to a point in his career where he's willing to kind of assume that Jason Kidd role where he's kind of a spot up 3-point shooter?
I think it would have to be a couple years down the road. I don't think he's there yet. I don't think he'll be there yet this next coming off season. But I don't know. I mean, I think if you're the Spurs, you kind of have the Spurs culture on your side, I guess. And you say like, well, you know, it doesn't matter who we bring in. And Chris Paul's not really like a bad egg necessarily. You know, I think he's
kind of a bad egg for me, but
yeah. Well, that's another story. you can see the Clippers bowing out in round two or round three again, and you know Blake goes his one way. Like the options for Chris Paul are going to be there, obviously, but like to win, the Spurs might be the only better option for him. You know, unless somehow he's able to work a deal to like Cleveland or something. Even I don't know why the Cavs would do that at this point.
Yeah, I think. I think you're going to see Carmelo moved fairly soon.
Yep.
And obviously there's all that talk about those guys wanting to kind of unite on a team together. I think if they want to do that, where winning a title is a realistic goal, they should do it soon because, you know, especially with Wade and CP, I mean, I think Carmelo's game's going to age extremely well.
I think Wade's like by far the biggest liability of those four.
Right. And you also have a guy like Kyrie Irving. You know, you're not going to bring those guys in and take touches away from Kyrie. So I could kind of see that happening, although I don't know why any of those guys would want to go to Cleveland. Like, they would want to play with LeBron, but I feel like they would kind of be like, dude, you should just come here, man. Like, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, Cleveland's the team that could kind of do it, though, right? Because you have the piece, and like Kevin Love, you can just flip for Melo, or, you know, CP, you can flip for Kyrie. I think that's kind of what makes it easy.
You can't flip.
Well, like, in theory, like money-wise, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be the dumbest basketball. Yeah, it would be terrible to trade Kyrie.
I think they will play together, but I think it'll be years from now, this offseason. Anyway, number 10. This, I assume, is the guy you mean could be quite a few spots higher, Thon Maker.
No, I think I kind of nailed his ranking. I think properly taking.
I had to give myself a self eval here. I'd say I killed this one.
Properly taking into account the risk and not ranking him so low that I can look like a complete idiot in a few years, which is on the table with a guy like this. Mm-hmm. Total lottery ticket. I don't think you. We were kind of talking about, I don't know if it was on a pod or in the office, about how many minutes Giannis saw in his rookie year. It was actually more than I remembered. I think it was like in the low 20s or something like that. I don't know if Thon even sees that many this year, just given the makeup of their roster.
Yeah, if there's some injuries, maybe. But right now, they're fairly deep in the front court.
He's the type of guy, though, that I think, is as long as he's not in the D League, he could still get you like 1.5 blocks per game just in like 15, 18 minutes off the bench. So that's definitely intriguing. I still think his body makes him kind of an injury risk long term.
Yeah, it's going to be wait and see. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of him this rookie season. Marquese Chris is at number 11. He didn't foul all that much in his first preseason game. That was a big plus.
Yeah, this one might end up looking bad too. I might have him too low. But I mean, he's another lottery ticket for me. Just you kind of. How do you feel about guys that don't have as many just basketball hours logged? You know what? A guy that comes late to his sport. I see the case for them having more upside than they've shown. But I also just think that there's some skills, like basketball skills. I especially feel this way about like a sport like baseball, where you need a certain amount of hours logged at an early age to really become a solid fundamental player.
What's that? I mean, it's like with learning a language, right? Like you can learn Spanish when you're 30, but it's a whole lot easier to do when you're just better at it if you do it as a little kid. Yeah, I mean, we've seen it work both ways. I mean, there's cases you can point to where late bloomers have flourished. You know, I think didn't Andre Drummond not play until he was, you know, later in his life? You know, we've also seen kids.
It's a special kind of player. It's a certain kind of player, though, right? Where it's a guy that protects the rim. I feel like that's, you know, a guy like Serge Ibaka, like guys that protect the rim.
Yeah, when you have like one job that you're assigned to do, I think it's
finish dunks.
Yeah, it's easier to learn
shoot
one
open
role.
Threes, like
right.
It's really hard to become like a well-rounded player.
I think that's a good way to put it. But I mean, right now they're going to ask Chris to do is like roll to the hoop, occasionally hit a spot up jumper and just dunk. So I mean, their front court is so crowded right now that it might be a little bit before we see how he's fully used. Number 12, Juan Hernan Gomez.
What do you think about Hernan Gomez? Because
I have not seen a lot of Hernan Gomez, I got to admit.
I think
we're talking about the Nuggets, Hernan Gomez.
He's very interesting to me. I think he's a guy that would have fit in perfectly on those like Steve Nash Suns teams, or like to go way back, like those Steve Nash Mavs teams. Like he just needs to be on like he'd be great on this current Rockets team. Like he needs to be on just a high powered offensive attack where there's just a lot of grabbing and go, and he can. You know, he can shoot it from NBA range. He can get by some guys off the dribble. I don't think he's going to do a ton defensively. But I don't know. I mean, I think at this point, I mean, he went a lot higher, I think, in the draft than most people expected. I think when you kind of get into this range, a guy that could score 16 points a game maybe in his prime years while not giving you a ton else other than like three-pointers and a high field goal percentage, I think that's pretty useful here.
Yeah, I mean, this is another guy where, you know, Denver's so deep that, you know, I think he'll find his way onto the court as a rookie, but it might only be in a very limited capacity. Cheick Diallo at number 13, a guy that I think probably plays fewer than 50 games maybe, you know, as far as just being on the court this season, you know, barring some injuries and even as shallow as the Pelicans are, they actually do have depth at the center spot. That's really power forward center, I guess, is really the only spot that you kind of like on that team. You know, they basically came out and said, yeah, Diallo's going to play in the D League this year. He'll be up with them for a lot of games, but they're not expecting much from him at all. That said, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, coming out of high school was viewed as potential top five pick. He goes to Kansas, kind of follows in the same footsteps of Cliff Alexander, and just never really seemed comfortable. He was suspended, I think, for eligibility issues at first, and it seemed like that kind of put him behind the eight ball, and he was never really able to improve his stock at the college level. But, I mean, there's still a lot to like. We saw him at the combine. He looked really, really good. And what is your long-term outlook 2-3 years down the road?
I think he could just be a monster in terms of blocks and steals and rebounds. Maybe like a more athletic Bismack Biyombo. Like he can finish. Like he in transition, even in the half court, on like, you know, you do a pick and roll and like a lob feed to him, he can finish that stuff in traffic. Just a really special athlete. Love his body. Like it's a really kind of fluid, all the parts move together type of body. He's kind of weird in the fact that I think he's just 6'9", but had
he looks bigger
7'4" wingspan. He's just a really, really unique player. I think it's going to be mostly defense and lobs, like I said, but I think that will work out well, ideally next to a guy like Anthony Davis. Because that way, I think Davis, I think you want Davis to be the biggest guy on the court for you. And so, like, people say, like, he needs to play the five. I think he can't be out there with, like, a guy like Ashik, but I think he can be out there with a guy like Diallo, even if Diallo's primary job is to protect the rim.
Right. Davis can still protect the rim, but that's not all he has to worry about.
And you can have a guy like Diallo guard certain fives to kind of give Davis a break. I think that would just be a much better fit than a guy like Ashik. And I think I'm excited. Hopefully 2-3 years down the road, before Davis inevitably leaves New Orleans, those guys get to.
He might be arguably like their third best asset right now behind Davis and Buddy Hield.
It's pretty sad.
It is pretty sad. You got Caris LeVert at 14, Malachi Richardson at 15. Do you have much to say on either of these guys?
No.
Okay. Sabonis at 16. He's starting right now for OKC during the preseason. We'll see how long that lasts.
So your boy Urs is coming off the bench?
Urs came up. So Steven Adams and Sabonis started at center and power forward, respectively, in game one. Adams got hurt, didn't play in game two. But then I believe they started Kantor and Sabonis. So Ersan's come off the bench both games.
Sixth man of the year.
I mean, obviously, if he meets the eligibility, that's a shoe-in. I think they're going to need Ersan shooting. I think he'll end up being the starter. What?
is he even like a good 3-point shooter anymore?
He's a streaky 3-point shooter.
Like he's one of those guys like in the Kentavious Caldwell Pope bag where like everyone's always like, ooh, 3-and-D, stretch 4.
Once you get that label, it's hard to shake it.
I never am like terrified when Ilyasova's out there lining up threes if I'm going against him. So.
No.
But okay, so you know, Sabonis, I think it's interesting that he's starting right now. I would probably take the under on 25 minutes a game though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well I think they're gonna need more out of Kantor this year. Like obviously Cantor's horrific on D, but they're gonna need that scoring. You know, when you lose Ibaka and you lose Durant, I think they're just gonna have to live with Kantor giving up points on D just because of how efficient he is as a scorer, and I think that kind of keeps Sabonis at bay as a rookie. But I do like him long term. I still don't know if he ever more than like a 13 and like 8 guy though.
No.
Like where is his peak? Like Thad Young?
Man. I don't even know.
They're not the same type of player exactly. That's not maybe not the best comp.
I'm trying to think. Like he to me is just one of those guys who is a every NBA team wants because he just doesn't really have any weaknesses, but he isn't. You look at the stats and you're like, eh, you know, you kind of take it or leave it.
Right.
You know, maybe like a like Nick Collison in his absolute prime of primes, that type of player.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at him as probably having a higher upside right now than Collison, yeah. Knowing everything that we know in retrospect. But
I mean, this always happens, though, where you get a guy like this, or whether it's like Cody Zeller or whoever, where you're talking before you actually see them play in a full NBA season, you talk about like what their upside is, and then it just kind of becomes clear.
Why'd you bring up Cody Zeller?
I did. Is that a thing?
Just like an interesting comp for a fellow white player.
I mean, I only stick to in race comps.
No, I think
for myself when I comp myself to Deshaun Stevenson the other day.
We're always looking for comps for. We play a rec basketball league with the other RotoWire guys.
It's not a league. It's kind of a league.
It's a routine.
It's an hour of pickup hoops.
Okay,
every
we
week.
Play an hour of pickup hoops every week and. We're always trying to refine our NBA comps. And Deshaun Stevenson might be the best that you've ever thrown out there.
Yeah. I hate it when people give themselves comps that are, like, way too self-certain. Like, if you are not – like, unless you played, like, college ball, I don't think you should be allowed to give yourself a comp of, like, anybody who was ever even close to, like, an all-star in the NBA. Like,
you didn't like my Michael Jordan comp for myself?
I forget who your comp was.
I think we didn't. Well, at one point we had decided on like the worst possible version of Dwayne Wade because of style of play.
I think you're like rookie year Dwayne Wade, or maybe like this.
I think
last
like sophomore
year
of high school Dwayne Wade.
Okay, yeah. Like
yeah, let's not give me too much
because you're all about the Euro step and.
Yeah, just ask Max out in the office how that went for him this past week.
To me, I think me and Deshaun, specifically, I think it was 2011, 2012 Deshaun? Or 2010?
When they won the title, it would have been 10-11.
Okay, 10-11 Deshaun. I'm title year Deshaun.
Number 92, ATM in the kitchen.
Like, I just bring all the want and desire you could ask for on defense, and I go completely AWOL after we win the title, and you really have no idea where I am, what I'm doing. You just know that I really enjoyed winning that title.
Yeah. And you get that title for the rest of your career.
All right, now
let's get to McCaw.
This is really the reason we ended up talking about this in the first place.
The reason we're doing this entire pod.
I wanted to talk about Patrick McCaw. I think this guy, like, if I'm redoing this list and I had enough, if I had enough stones, I would maybe put him seventh or eighth. I think if I was redoing this, I think Patrick McCaw might be the steal of this year's draft.
And of course he's in Golden State.
Right.
Well, first of all, how much does being in Golden State and developing in that system with those players around him, like, does that help?
Nothing. No, nope? I mean, like, okay. That has really nothing to do with it. I just really like the player from the brief bits I've seen of him in the preseason so far. Not only does he look like he's maybe added 5 or 10 pounds even just since Summer League, but he... Or not even summer league, the combine. Like we saw him at
he
the
still
combine.
Looks extremely
he's,
skinny.
He's skinny. Yeah, he's skinny as hell. But I still think he's added 5 or 10 pounds since the combine. He even as a skinny guy, when he's out there with like Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, like it still kind of looks like he belongs in the NBA. Like it's not a body that I necessarily think is gonna. Prevent him from becoming a really solid NBA player. And I think the Golden State thing probably hurts him in terms of dynasty league value just because you can't really see a scenario where he's anything more than a sixth or seventh man for them in the next two or three seasons. But
I mean, he could have, like, the Bazemore effect, you know, playing with those guys. And not that, you know, Bazemore was an illusion or anything, but I think it's going to make him look really good when he's out there.
I think he could... Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he shot, like, 38-40% from three this year. If on, like, a per-36 basis he was giving you two steals a game. I think he's kind of a tweener, point guard, shooting guard to me, where I think he can run the point. He's probably best if he kind of develops in sort of a Zach LaVine mold as a kind of new-age shooting guard. But I think if you're doing kind of any sort of dynasty league stuff with this year's draft class, and you want a guy who everyone's going to be sleeping somewhat on, I mean, you're not going to have to do anything crazy to go get Patrick McCaw. I think he's a guy to target.
All right, let's real quickly. Anybody else in this, you know, kind of 18 to 25 range you want to touch on whatsoever? Not even Scal?
Nope.
Not even Scal. All right, well, good. So be it. We'll let you have your way then. That'll wrap it up. The RotoWire NBA podcast will be back on Friday with, I believe, the Three Amigos, led by DJ Trainer.